Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics on this Thanksgiving time that we're all experiencing here on the Earth plane. I'm going to cover some new and some old material today on the Billy Meier case. We're going to talk a little bit about, in the beginning here, Billy growing up, about some of his initial contacts, and then I want to move into the might of thoughts and some information on fluidal powers today. Billy Meier started having his contacts, you could say roughly 1941-1942. Billy lived in a close to a town called Bullock, in a little place called Niederflux, which was surrounded by two mountain ranges, one called the Eisenmoser and the other were called the Bruder Mountains, and there were wide forests and extensive meadows there. But Billy, before he had any contacts with his first contact, he started to have these kind of epiphanies, and it was 3 a.m. one morning when he woke up and crawled out a lower bedroom window and looked up at the beautiful starry night and said, "My life is made out of the love of creation." And he saw the light which the stars emitted, but he sensed another light, an invisible light, which he called the love of creation, and he heard his own lips say, "Since ancient times, I lived among the stars." And he talked about feeling impulses. And later in life, he would learn that these impulses came from the storage banks. And he had good memories that penetrated him and also gave him a sense of purpose in his life. Well, there are storage banks in our universe. There are storage banks associated with our planet, storage banks associated with our solar system, storage banks associated with the galaxy and the universe. And these are not, of course, physical storage banks. They are energetic storage banks. And recorded in those storage banks are all of our thoughts, all of our deeds, going back thousands and thousands and thousands of years. And somehow the subconscious and the conscious mind can pick up on information in these storage banks. And another interesting thing that also happens is your skeleton has what's called fluidal powers associated with it. And those are the energies associated with your thinking, your entire mental block. And you can make back connections to your previous lives, skeleton, for example. Subconsciously, there's a way to connect to these fluidal powers stored in your skeleton from another life if that skeleton has been buried. So, and that can cause, it doesn't really elaborate, I haven't really read where it elaborated on this yet, but making that back connection to a skeleton from a previous life can help in some way your evolution in a very, very dramatic way. So there's all this interesting stuff that's going on that people are not really aware of. These fluidal energies, they settle in your clothes, in your furniture, and you may have a particular sweatshirt. I know I do. For some reason, every time I put it on, I feel good. Well, it's probably because you've had very, very good thoughts wearing certain clothes, just somehow, you know, just the random occurrences of life that you always had very positive, healthy thoughts, when you wear certain clothing, and those clothes will store those thoughts, much where our thoughts are stored in the universal storage banks. So it's just amazing the power of the thoughts to get to the point, I guess, of it all. And Billy, at a very young age, was staring at the beaming stars and having this unfamiliar longing for the vast distances and the faraway worlds. And he heard his own voice say, "Since ancient times I lived among the stars." And at that time he knew who he was and what his mission was on the earth. And he said at a very young age, everything which exists in the whole universe is a manifestation of the might and the infinite and the true love of the mighty universal consciousness, which he just called creation. And he also learned at this time that to look for the truth, he had to go inward and into the inner self. And that makes more sense now as I've read the Might of Thoughts again and again and again, because we have an innermost creational personality. It's kind of our counselor. And this innermost creational personality sends impulses, which are signals, impulses to our material consciousness, impulses to evolve. And then you have, on the other hand, a what you could call a false self, or this the self-created ego, which tries to make things more complicated. It tries to create a tyranny over the innermost creational personality. So we have a bit of an internal conflict going on until we can learn to control our thoughts better and better and better. But at this time, Billy had a special friendship with his pastor, Rudolf Zimmerman. It was very interesting. A Christian pastor that was having telepathic contacts with these extraterrestrial humans. Roughly, Billy was 6, 7, 8 years old by this time, probably. Actually, I'm not absolutely certain about his age at this point, but at one point, he had his first sighting, which was this humongous disc, a disc between 200 and 300 meters, that appeared over a church steeple, probably close to Balak, and then disappeared over what's called the Horrigan Forest. It was a tremendous experience that Billy had. His father was there. His father thought it was a new weapon that Hitler had. So right around 1942, Billy starts to get these telepathic messages from an extraterrestrial man named Svoth. Svoth was about 1,000 years old. He was an extraterrestrial human from a race of humans that call themselves the Pleiaren. Unfortunately, they've been called Pleiadians. They're not from our Pleiades, but they're from a different space-time configuration, about some 80 light years beyond our Pleiades. Our universe has 7 different space-time configurations. And each one of these different space-time configurations in some ways must be similar to the others, because we have the same planetary, some of the same star systems, let's say. There is a Lyra Vega system in Svoth's people's space-time configuration. So I look at it like rooms in a house. It may not be the best analogy, but these extraterrestrial groups, they live in different space-time configurations. There's our space-time configuration, and there are 6 others. And the Pleiaren come out of their own space-time configuration and enter our space-time configuration and then travel some large distance in our space-time configuration to get here. Now, they have technology that allows them to jump these incredible distances in almost no time passing. After talking with Michael Cremo and thinking about it and also listening to a little bit of Eric Von Daniken, I think we've had extraterrestrials that have interacted with the people of the Earth. And when I say extraterrestrials, I'm always talking about extraterrestrial humans, some of which were very, very advanced, and they could do these hyperleaps. I don't think all of them were that advanced, and I'm just speculating here. I don't know. I think some of these groups came in these gigantic flying cities, which were actually tremendously huge motherships that really couldn't travel that quickly, maybe only 5-10% speed of light. So they would have to make long generational journeys where people would die, people would be born. It might take 200-300 years for them to get to a planet like Earth. And then they would take the smaller craft down, and then they would settle on the Earth and build these gigantic pyramids, stay for a couple hundred years or whatever. Maybe in the case of some of these, like we have the civilization of Pelagon and the civilization of Atlantis and Lemuria were here for thousands of years. And these motherships would just stay and circle the Earth. And when these people would leave, they would just up and leave for whatever reason. And all we have, I think, left are these gigantic structures that they built in stone, like the Great Pyramid, which is 73,000 years old. So I think we, in the Earth, and the reason, one of the reasons I speculate on that is because they could interact with the Earth people quite easily. Their vibrations, so to speak, their thought energies were not that far they're advanced than ours. So some of these groups could interact with us physically without having any negative consequences. Now, Svoth interacted with Billy and could interact with Billy because of Billy's extremely ancient spirit form. I know this is a lot of material all at once, and I'll try to sort this out. And if you've been to the show before, I know you've heard some of this. Sometimes I imagine on this program it's like drinking from a fire hose, but don't get discouraged because I do repeat. We have something called the spirit form, and it resides in an area of our middle brain called the superior colliculus. And it sends energy throughout the whole body. It's our spiritual consciousness. Most of our spirit forms here on the Earth for people are about 4 million years old, I think. Roughly about that age, 4, 4.5, something like that. Now, Billy's is very, very unusual. And it's much, much more ancient. It's 9.6 billion years old. And these extraterrestrials, and I think when they first got here, they saw this spirit form reincarnating. See, Svoth recognized some of Billy's previous lives, and he talks about it in the context as Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, Muhammad. But I don't know that they at that time had an understanding that he had been their teacher in the past as Nokodamian. And I think Quetzal discovered that later in the contacts, around contact 400 or 500 or so. So they have the technology to monitor spirit forms. And Svoth knew that Billy had incarnated as a prophet and a teacher on the earth for the past 13,000 years, that he had been Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, and Muhammad. And in ancient times, these prophets had different names. So, and maybe we'll talk about that a little bit today, but So Sloth was here on the earth to help Billy with this teaching mission because he knew that this little boy would grow up again because of the tremendous age of his inner counselor. Remember, we were talking about the innermost creational personality. And Sloth recognized that this young boy was going to be wise, extremely wise, wiser than him. And Sloth was here for the first 11 years or so, from 1942 to about 1953. And he was teaching Billy. Now, when he's teaching Billy, he's teaching his material consciousness. We have a spiritual consciousness and a material consciousness. Sloth already knew that his spiritual consciousness was ancient. And there's really nothing that much he could teach his spiritual consciousness. But the boy, the material consciousness, that would grow up. So Sloth could teach young Billy about various spiritual things, about the spirit form and about reincarnation. And he also awakened some of Billy's abilities from previous lives. So he placed a device on Billy's head with many wires. And this strange instrument awakened Billy's ability that he had had in previous lifetimes and these abilities to look in the future. And this device also protected Billy against people that might have been, that might try to force themselves into Billy's mind in the future. So Sloth first landed his silvery pear-shaped craft near Bulak, and this was right around February 3rd, 1945, I believe at 12:10 p.m. And Billy got a message to go out into the forest near his home in Bulak, and then this silvery pear-shaped craft lands. Sloth steps out, and Billy's pulled into the ship as if by ghostly hands. And then these things happen that I was describing earlier about Sloth placing the device on Billy's head. Sloth also told Billy that he would lead a very difficult life, that he would lose his left arm in a bus accident, that his wife would turn against him, as well as many other people would turn against him and call him a hoaxer. Now, Billy's real name is Edward, which means the guardian of the treasure. So he's known as Beam, B-E-A-M, Billy Edward Albert Meyer. And he was told by Sloth to stay in the background, to not go in the public too much. So you don't see Billy getting interviewed on radio programs or by the alternative media. His goal, his mission, is spiritual teaching in the background. And his intention is to awaken the human race out of its sleep. And eventually this teaching, this creational truth, will become a worldwide movement, which will bring peace and love and freedom to the earth. Now, Sloth also taught Billy things like spiritual telepathy. So this enabled Edward to pull information down from a spiritual plane. Billy was also taught about the coming great destruction, when America would drop the atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So part of Billy's mission here is to teach us about our connection with all things, that everything in the entire universe is bound together and it's one. And there's a oneness and connectedness with everything. And this is because of the creation. And this is because of the love of creation. Love is the highest principle in creation. And through it, everything exists in absolute logic. And Billy would have a much more profound understanding of this later in life when he took the ride on the mothership, and they did those hyperleaps where he felt that connection with creation, which was very, very, it was just a tremendous experience that he had. And so to recap real quick, Billy's spirit form is very ancient. He's been the person that was called Henoch back 9,300 years ago. He was a person called Eliah. He was a person called Isaiah. That was around 772 BC. He was a person called Jeremiah. We call Jeremiah today. He was also a person called Emmanuel. He died in Srinagar, Kashmir, in India, around 111 years AD. Now, Emmanuel is not the person that we call Jesus Christ. There really was no person named Jesus Christ. And there, see, that's why I said earlier that there, we don't call these, the names that we call these people, like Jeremiah, they were called different things during their lifetime. There was no letter J in the ancient world. Not in the Aramaic, not in the Hebrew, and not in the Greek. There was no letter J. So there really, the name Jesus Christ came in right around 1500. There was a man named Gian Giorgio Trissino who invented the letter J, an Italian scholar who was a playwright, who started to use these fancy variations of the letter I, that, and that's where the letter J got started, and it kind of snowballed from there, and it made its way into many different languages. But the ancient languages of the ancient time did not have the J sound. So really, the book of Job was the book of IOB. James and John in the Bible had names that began with a Y. I think the equivalent in German of the name James, or John, excuse me, is Johann. So what I'm trying to say is the names we use to identify a lot of these people have been westernized and changed over the years. Now, according to my people, the content of the Bible has been also very modified. What I mean by that is the scribes that wrote a lot of these things down, they wrote down what they wanted to write down, not necessarily what they were told. The apostles, quote-unquote, could not read, so there was no way for them to verify what was written down. So a lot of information that's stored in both the New and the Old Testament is inaccurate. Some of it is accurate. Well, I've kind of made a detour a little bit, but these are some of the interesting things I've learned over the years by studying the Meyer information. And what's interesting is that it clarifies things. It certainly clarifies the activities in the Old Testament. For example, the Meyer information says that the person that we call Jehovah in the Old Testament, for example, in Numbers 31:7, when the Moses told the armies to kill all the Midianites, which they did kill all the male soldiers, but Moses said the women and children should be killed as well as everyone. But the Israelis were allowed to keep for themselves the virgins. I don't know how they would determine that, but they were allowed to keep 32,000 virgins for themselves. If you read Numbers 31:7, so these people were so horrible, according to the Old Testament, that Jehovah said kill them all except for the virgins. So you can start to see the inconsistency of that kind of thing. And that's why the Meyer material tells us that Jehovah was a person. He was a human being, a more advanced human being, a group of negative extraterrestrials called the Giza Intelligences, who were below the Great Pyramid. They used a kind of technology called telenotic impulses to hypnotize the people there, more or less. And this had been done since the fall of Atlantis and Lemuria, because these people, these extraterrestrial humans, basically wanted to control the Earth for themselves. So this might be a good segue into a contact that occurred in 1953 on February 3rd, when Billy was told that he would get his second teacher. And this is a contact called Ask Its Acquaintanceship. And the way this is written, I think, is tremendously beautiful, so I'm going to read some of it to you. It says, "Bitter cold prevailed at this early morning hour as I made my way to the favorite place of my thoughts, where I was often alone for so many hours, and where 16 days earlier Svoth also announced to me my acquaintanceship." Let me pick back up here. I'm going to play a little bit of Nature Sounds just for a minute or two, and I'll be right back. Please stay with us. Okay, I'm back. Sorry about that short little break. These things happen. This sometimes. Anyway, this is 1953. Billy's 16 years old, and Billy has been told that he will get his new teacher, a woman named Asket. Asket's from the Tao universe. She's from a race of people called the Timmers. The Tao universe is kind of our sister parallel universe. It was created 46 trillion years ago as our universe was created at the same time. And Billy says here, again, I like to read passages from this because I think it's so beautiful the way it's written. "In spite of the sharp cold, I broke out in a sweat as I climbed the small hill on which the agreed place was situated. Arriving there, I did not wait long for some sort of thing which was still supposed to come there, because arriving at the dome of the hill, I immediately saw a bright light plunge down from the sky and sit down not far from me in the hard, frozen ground. The bright light went out, and I saw a matte silver and discus-shaped object which stood majestically quiet on three landing spheres and appeared to wait for me. The disc's landing spheres were completely foreign to me because I have never seen such things with that kind of form before." So Billy has gone up to this top of the hill, the predetermined meeting place. He knows that Svoth is about to die and he's going to get his new teacher, Asket. The ship comes down. He sees this light come out of the sky and it lands in front of him and has a strange landing spheres. And then he gets this telepathic invitation from the ship. So the ship's computer is contacting his mind, which is very interesting. And he feels pulled into the ship in the same way he did when he was pulled into Svah's ships. He talks about as if being pulled in by ghostly hands. So he's inside this craft and he's looking around. And he thought, you know, gosh, am I in some kind of a dream? Is this real? What's going on? And he was in the ship, and then a bright light, which he said, which came from everywhere in the interior of the ship, suddenly went out. And he seemed like he was sitting outdoors. And he couldn't see anything of the ship. He even pulled his hand up in front of his eyes, and he couldn't even see his own hands. So everything about the ship, everything about his body is now invisible. Now listen to what it says here. However, I also started to move upwards at an angle into the night sky and slowly floated at a low altitude towards the nearby village, where I simply remained hanging there just 2 meters over the house, which later belonged to my parents. While Askit's voice again suddenly sounded in me, so now he's contacted by Askit telepathically, and she gives him a several minutes long explanation regarding what's going on and what his future path in life is. And so the ship then starts to move and it takes off at a great speed. So the craft is extremely high in the atmosphere. And Billy sees the sun. He sees the Indian Ocean. And he sees what he calls a truly quite fantastic picture. And then the ship goes all the way to the Middle East. In a very, very few short minutes, he's in the Middle East. And the ship floats gently to the earth, and he's in the country of Jordan. And it says here, in spite of the weak light of the night, I was able to recognize that the earth was reddish and that the earth actually consisted more of sand, while huge fissured rocks towered in the nearby surroundings. And he realized at this point that he's in the country of Jordan. And it wasn't long until Askit's ship slowly sinks to the earth and lands nearby. And Billy has to wait a half an hour for anything to happen. And then finally, Askit comes out of the ship. And it says here that she approached me in a familiar way, and I suddenly perceived an enormous loving sympathy which somehow penetrated me in a peculiarly painful way. And this perception was so very familiar to me that I was able to cause pain. It was able to cause painful feelings in me because I had indeed missed her in my earthly existence until now. So Billy, at this point, sees Askit. He feels her thought. He feels her sympathies, and they penetrate him, and he remembers that feeling, that he's had that feeling before, and he literally misses her. But he doesn't know why. In his conscious mind, Askit tells him, when Billy asks about it, she says, with a later question regarding this, Askit only smiled and explained that I should consider my other personalities in earlier lives before this current one. And Billy says, I found this somewhat secretive and I wanted to know more, yet Askit admitted nothing more about it. So, and Billy says things like he thought her long brunette hair was very beautiful, her face was beautiful. So he got on board her ship and they traveled over the Mediterranean Sea, crossed the sea. Billy was able to see the gigantic pyramid structures below them as they traveled over Egypt. And then the ship started to gently come down, and he saw the gigantic animal human of the Sphinx and the Great Pyramid, the gigantic Great Pyramid, as they landed in the ship. Billy and Asket got out of the ship, and at this time her ship became invisible, and she attached devices onto her belt and his belt, so both of them were invisible. And Billy at this point starts to play some tricks on some local women there that were in tents getting dressed. So let me read here just a little bit. This is kind of a side tangent, but this is a strange story. It says, so Billy has gone into this. It says, it was a woman's tent. Seven young and two older women were busy there with their morning toilet, while a further young woman nourished an infant on her breast. And I wondered again that these humans took no notice of me. See, Billy's invisible. It must indeed have been a simply monstrous for them that a man could have invaded their tent. Yet no way were they concerned about it. And straight away I went up to a young, pretty Arabian woman, naked to the waist, who sat on a bundle of something next to a bowl of water. And he slowly bent down to her and stole a kiss on the lips. And this woman faints, I guess, and Billy gently allows her, you know, keeps her from falling. And he kisses some of the other women, plays a trick. This is kind of a side tangent story. I most of the time just leave out altogether. So Asket and Billy move on to the Great Pyramid, and they find these old passageways. And it says here, through long, musty passageways, we walked in twilight through the interior of the pyramid. Then it was dark, so dark that I could not recognize anything anymore. And I wondered about the fact that I did not collide with anything, and that Asket found the way in spite of this literally Egyptian darkness. And we walked in that manner for a long time, and I felt that we climbed down somewhere on various occasions. And then they come to a passageway with this gigantic stone called an ashlar, which dissolves into nothing. And Billy and Asket walk through this passageway. And it says here, a steeply descending passageway was guarded by two oddly clothed men. And Asket's voice whispered into Billy's consciousness that they should not speak because they cannot afford to be caught by these guards while they're down here. The guards, it says here, we saw are members of or are related to a power-conscious extraterrestrial group who, through certain impure means, force the majority of Earth humans under their control in order to bring the entire Earth under their control. Now, it's interesting that these extraterrestrials are no longer on the Earth, but I think the control system is still in place to a degree and still functions. And many of our subconsciousness and unconsciousnesses are attacked. And maybe later on in the show we can talk more about that. And Billy goes on, the passage, which was furnished throughout with steps, led steeply down into the pyramid. Deeper and deeper it went down, and then suddenly we stood in a gigantic hall which seemed to overflow with light coming from everywhere and nowhere. and in this hallway were the gigantic disc-shaped spaceships and two smaller ships. Now, these were ships somehow that were underground in these old cubicle constructions that were some 73,000 years old. And then Billy looks on this small plateau. He sees a very large wooden-shaped cross, hand-forged nails with this brownish-black coating on them. And he sees a crown of thorns, a purple-colored cape, a small leather pouch full of glass pearls and glass stones. And this was Emmanuel's crucifixion utensil. The Meyer material, again, doesn't use the term Jesus Christ because they say it's an inaccurate term and it doesn't really... The whole story has been distorted, and even the name has been distorted. But Billy was... this was overwhelming to him, this whole experience. And when the two left, she spent about two full days talking to Billy about what they had learned and what this all meant. And they talked about his mission and if he was ready to accept the mission which was ahead of him. Now, earlier, I had been talking about the mental fluidal energies that exist. Now, one of the things I'd like to say so people understand, first of all, the power of our minds are incredible. We don't realize this. We really are in control. If we learn how to manage the might of our thoughts, we are truly can create the circumstances of our life. So, we need to learn to think in neutral, positive thoughts. And that means that our thoughts are not negative and they're not wildly positive. So good thoughts will lead to good feelings. So if you're having bad feelings, re-examine your thoughts, because typically bad feelings come out of thoughts that are not neutral, positive. So learn to inspect your feelings. So good feelings come from good thoughts. Good feelings will start to produce good habits. And good habits bring good circumstances into your life. For example, I like to tell myself, and this comes from the book, The Might of Thoughts, I am the master of my own destiny. I am the forger of my own fortune. I create the luck in my life through good, neutral, positive thinking. I steer my good, healthy thoughts so that I have inner freedom. I do not allow negative thoughts to remain in my consciousness. I pluck them out. My consciousness is like a healthy, green, flowing garden full of beautiful plants. And I remove any thoughts that are negative. Our thoughts should be neutral, positive, not negative. It is the negative thoughts which disturb the feelings and thereby also the psyche. And oftentimes, these negative thoughts are automatic thoughts. In other words, if you do not steer your thoughts, if you do not, like a captain steering a ship, steer your thoughts, you will have invading negative thoughts that take on a life all their own, just like weeds in a garden, and they spread, and they can go throughout your old consciousness and put you in a state of misery. That's why you need to learn to tell yourself, I'm confident, I'm optimistic, I'm relaxed, I'm cheerful, I'm enthusiastic, I'm in harmony, I persevere, I persist, I endure, I am calm, I'm satisfied, I have hope, I have an inner counselor, my innermost creational personality, which impulses my material consciousness with evolutive impulses. I do not allow my false ego to create a tyranny over my inner counselor. I do not allow my false ego to complicate things. You can, through your own unconscious negative thoughts, create negative circumstances in your life. So we need to think with might. Now, what does that mean? Our thoughts that manifest are thoughts that are that have might associated with them. That means you're, the way I interpret that is that you have, it says here, for example, the might of the thinking is every human being's key to his or her personal power in all things. And if you have might associated with your thoughts, you have absolute certainty that you, this goal is going to be achieved, this zeal, this target. There is absolute certainty. You're the master of your own destiny. You create good circumstances in your life through good, neutral, positive thinking. What you think, you make real. So that's called a zeal-directive thought. The zeal-directive thought. And zeal-directive thoughts, which are then mightily used, whereby a self-mightification arises. So you can make your thoughts more mighty by clarifying them and having a zeal associated with your thoughts. So that which the human being thinks, mightfully thinks, that which the human being mightfully thinks manifests for him or her. So you have to mightfully think this. So let me read this one paragraph quickly. It says, many human beings nurture wish dreams, those which do not come to fruition, and many others which always remain unable to be fulfilled. In other words, for your thoughts to be fulfilled, they have to be mightful. You have to think things mightfully. But the might and the power of the thoughts through which something is brought to fruition exists in both forms. And this, indeed, so may be the case. In one case, through the might of the thoughts, the wish dreams bring itself to fruition. While in the other, the wish dream remains just that. Whereby, however, it constantly revives and equalizes the psyche. So in both cases, the might of the thoughts bring itself to fruition as in a success and as that which the human being thinks. Therefore, it is right when you say that which the human being mightfully thinks manifests for him or her. So that's the key. That which you mightfully think manifests for you. Not that which you just, a weak little notion that you had one day. So keep that in mind. So you want to nurture good thoughts. You want to evaluate yourself always, constantly, and remind yourself to think, be confident, be optimistic, be cheerful, be thankful, be enthusiastic. And these are all steps towards making your thoughts more mightful. If you let your thoughts become negative, you will manifest negative circumstances in your life. Your thoughts, your mental fluidal powers, are emanating. These are swinging waves. And these powers, they come from thoughts and feelings. And these swinging waves, they contain the character of the human being, as well as the movements of your consciousness. And as I was saying earlier, these powers settle into your skeleton, and they settle and are deposited into objects. These mental fluidal waves deposit themselves into books, into clothing and jewelry, And the longer these things surround the person, the more intensively they will be charged. That's why it's good if you can find a home. Not, you shouldn't move. I'm not saying you shouldn't move if you're in bad circumstances. I mean, a lot of times moving is a blessing if you're moving to something better. But if you find your spot, stick with it. Because your mental fluidal powers are depositing themselves in the objects which surround you. And this energy, it settles into your skeleton. So the swinging waves associated with your psyche, your feelings and your thoughts are in these objects around you. The energy of the mind, it goes into the walls of your house. It enters the house as you think these thoughts. So people, when you come into a house, you can often feel the swinging waves of the people in the house. And it might be a very warm, attractive kind of thing. You may put on a piece of clothing that is charged with your swinging waves, with your energies. And if you think positively enough, these positive energies will get deposited into things around you, which is very good, because just the act of coming home can help correct your thinking than if you've, maybe you've gotten some negative thoughts that day. So if you have, like I said, a piece of clothing that you wear and you're comfortable in, it has these positive energies. So these items, they can surround you and create a whole world around you. By the same token, negative swinging waves. If you're thinking with negative swinging waves, if you're in a place where there's a lot of negative thinking, this can affect you very negatively. Also, animals and plants have fluidal powers associated with them. Most of, for example, animals, most of these fluidal powers come from instinct. So when you enter a house, you may feel attracted or you may feel instantly repelled. These swinging waves, they're in the house. That's where the whole idea of haunted houses comes from, and we'll get to that. It goes, the energies go into the beams of the house. They build up in the clothes, in the jewelry. These negative swinging waves and objects can cause nightmares and bad dreams. A dog that chews on a bone will leave fluidal energies in the bone. And one of the most important things you can do and should do, it'll strengthen you subconsciously, is your back connection to your skeleton of an earlier life. This happens subconsciously, and your fluidal immune system can be strengthened by this. And it helps our evolution. It gives our evolution a kind of a push forward by being able to back connect to our skeleton. So you know, maybe 500 miles from where you are now, your skeleton from a previous life is buried. You can subconsciously connect to that. How do we do that? I don't know. It's very interesting. So these impulses, they can be held for a long time. For example, the impulses in the storage banks can be held for all eternity, practically. But do not allow yourself to be cremated. These skeletons must remain intact. It's very, very important to be able to make these back connections to the skeleton of our previous life. And it's also good to be able to make connection with your home surroundings, the mental connections you make. So these fluidal energies are very important. Now, what causes apparitions? Apparitions are just the mental fluidal powers which are stored in the house. And there's an example of this old lady who would, every 4 p.m. every day, she would nap in her armchair. And during that nap, an apparition would appear. a child would move through the house and would be singing. And this happened like on a regular basis. It was studied, I guess. This was all this lady's thoughts, the power of her subconscious thoughts. This apparition was. That's all it was. And that's the incredible power of our thoughts. So we have to not be underestimating the power of our thoughts. Even in Hinterschmid Ruti, they had a shadowy figure. Now, these are things that can be seen with the eyes. Shadowy figure making noises in their attic. Sometimes this shadowy figure would dart around the house. So even in Hinterschmid Ruti, they had this experience with this. The fluidal energies, pure thought swinging waves harness great power, and these mental swinging waves can be stored for thousands of years, particularly in old churches and monasteries. I would not recommend entering old churches and monasteries because the swinging waves of people from hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years of funerals, people bringing their problems to these churches and praying for release from their problems. These energies over the years of all these people that are not oriented to the truth, they store themselves in these structures. And when you go into these structures, you can literally be killed by these energies. Billy talks about this. Billy was nearly killed when he entered an old monastery in Switzerland. So the more, for example, you become oriented to reality, the more vulnerable you are. Hi, guys. We've got lots of folks in Switzerland. KS in U.S., Eve, AK, COG. Thanks for coming to the show. These fluidal powers are absolutely fascinating. I think I got about 3 minutes left on the stream here. And I wanted to talk quickly about televisions, computers. There is a secret service that is manipulating people through the television. Be very careful. You're probably being seen. A lot of televisions have cameras in them that allow secret services to actually look at people. But we're being manipulated through television, through the computers. And this is one thing I like to tell myself. I am an independent thinker. I do not get my thoughts from the radio, from the television, from the internet, from movies. I make my own thoughts. I steer my own thoughts. But people are being subconsciously steered through television, through the radio, through the internet, through their iPhones. The iPhone is a very dangerous thing. We're being trained to take the chip. Remember, the elite want to insert a chip in you. They want a society that has no rights of free thought. First of all, they want to take your free thinking. They want to take away your freedom of speech. They want to take away your right to bear arms. They want to take away your right to freely travel. So study this material and maintain your healthy, independent thinking, and then we all have a chance. I want to thank you for coming to the show. You've been listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. We'll be back soon. Have a good day. Bye-bye.